get off.
Good morning. My friends call me Tennessee, and I am alcoholic. I realized that someplace back in my early years of my life that my mother probably had a vision that someday her little boy on a Sunday morning would be standing behind a podium in front of a whole group of folk, but I'm not at all sure that this is what she had in mind. This morning I will try to share with you my experience, strength, and hope, and try to tell you a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. I'm going to take care of part of that right now. Today, I'm trying to be the type of person that my neighbor's dog thinks I am. Some of y'all may understand that. I'm grateful to see you here, and I'm grateful to be here. I'll try to talk to you this morning and speak with you in regard to my relationship with God. In order to do that, I have to talk to you a little bit about what I was like. I would rather, if I had my choices, talk to you about the wonderful things in my life today. But in order to do that, you have to understand where I came from. Most of you already know. First of all, I want to thank Bill and the committee for the invitation to come and speak at Rock Eagle. It's a privilege and an honor. I appreciate the introduction. I remember when people had to explain me. And it's nice to be invited someplace instead of told where to go. Some of y'all understand that. I have shared this with you before, but for the benefit of the newcomers, I've been asked to share it again. I recently received a love letter from an old girlfriend that I used to date who lived close to Louisville, Kentucky. I know where Louisville is. And this is my love letter. It said, Susie Lee done fell in love and she planned to marry Joe, and she was so happy about it all, she told her pappy so. And pappy told her, now, Susie gal, you'll have to find another. I just assume your ma don't know, but Joe's your half-brother. So Susie put aside her Joe, then planned to marry Will. But when pappy got this bit of news, he said, there's trouble still. You can't marry Will, Miguel, and please don't tell your mother. But Will and Joe and several more, I know is your half-brother. But Mama knew and said, my child, you just do what makes you happy. You marry Will, or marry Joe, because you ain't no kin to pappy. Let's have a good time this morning, okay? Let's have a good time this morning. Let's learn how to laugh, even at ourselves, and laugh with others. The book says we're not a glum lot. If being sober wasn't more fun than being drunk, I'd get me a bottle on the way home. I enjoy my sobriety. And one of the most rewarding things is to watch other people get sober and see the light come on. That's the reason I come to Rock Eagle. I need to be honest with you. I'm a little bit like Liz Taylor's seventh husband on the honeymoon. He always knew what he was supposed to do. He was just trying to figure out some way to make it a little more interesting. And that's about what I'm doing right now. I got my start in the world in Greenup County, Kentucky. And if you've never been to South Portsmouth, you haven't missed a lot. It's not worth the trip. Save your gas money and go to the workshop in the fall. as soon as I got old enough to read a road map, I got out of Greenup County, Kentucky. And having been back there recently, and the folk up there are probably grateful for that. I was born in a normal family. My mother and daddy were Baptist, Methodist, Pilgrim Holiness, Church of Christ, Primitive Baptist, Old Line Primitive Baptist. That's the one who go to church once a month, whether they need it or not. And nobody in our family had character defects. Now, some of the neighbors had them, and Mom and Daddy would tell you about those. But they was good Baptist folk. They didn't talk about theirself at all. And for you youngsters, it cost a lot of money to get my hair colored like this. So I've been around here a while. They say, that old man don't know nothing about drugs. Oh, yes, I do. I got drugged to vacation Bible school. I got drugged to revival meetings. I got drugged to healing services. I seen folk get all excited about washing clean feet. I still don't understand all that. I got drugged everywhere when I was a kid. And I understood what that man was talking about last night about wearing hand-me-down. I mean, that ain't real bad unless you happen to have a bunch of older sisters and they. That. I know what poor is. Poor is when the poor folk live next door to you, bring you a basket at Christmas time. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my childhood. Probably one of the most unusual things about my childhood was it was unusually long. After I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I told my old buddy Marvin one day, I said, Marvin, I said, I grew up in Kentucky. He said, oh, no, you didn't. He said, you got bigger in Kentucky, but you're going to grow up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, what's that old fool mean? As a child, we grew up poor and dirty and hungry. Now, we didn't have 8 rooms and a bath. We had 4 rooms and a path. Before I get too far into this, I need to remind you of something. You see these pretty clothes I got on? Don't be impressed by these clothes. I saw me a couple hours ago without them. I was not impressed. But we had running water at our house. It ran right by the house in the creek. And if we wanted some of it, we took a bucket and went and dipped it out of the creek and set it in the kitchen. And I'm going to tell you something. Being poor does not build character. I don't care what you've heard. Growing up like that is not fun. And folk will talk about you. Some of them still do. There was an old man lived on the hard road. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time about a drunk law this morning. But there's an old man lived on the hard road. And he tried his best to get my daddy to let me come and live with him and his wife. And when I got that bit of news, I got excited. I was going to go live in the big brick house on the hard road. And Boris and Hazel had a pretty little Dairy Queen. They sold ice cream cones. And they had a little pond there beside the road that you could catch fish out of. I was ready to go to Forrest and Hazel's house. And Mom and Daddy talked it over. So Mr. Stewart came down and said, John, would you let that boy come and live with me and Miss Hazel? Daddy said, I talked it over with my wife, Forrest, and we decided we can't do that. I was devastated. I'd unpacked everything I owned in 2 paper grocery sacks. I had been ready to go for 6 or 7 days. And my mom and daddy didn't want me to have it any better than what I had it. Cold, hurt, hungry, sickly, and malnourished. Now, after doing some work out of this book, I realized this morning that Mom and Daddy let me go live with Forrest and Miss Hazel, I'd be standing here this morning telling you that my own parents didn't want me and they gave me to the neighbors. Don't you feel sorry for Tennessee? It's amazing how the alcoholic mind works. The folk we love, it never occurred to me once that Mom and Daddy might love me. The folk that love us the most, we put in a position where they can't do anything right. This little funny love story that I read you is all about perception. And that's what recovery's about for me, is my perception had to change. I wouldn't have you think of some idiot standing up here this morning. I attended South Portsmouth Independent High School. I was in the top 10 in my class the year I graduated. There was 14 seniors that year. Some of them had been seniors for quite a while. Everything I'm telling you is true. I went off to college, Nashville, Tennessee, and went to school there. Met a young lady, and we fell madly in sick. And that's where the holes in my head fit the rocks in hers. It was a child born. And somebody had given this lady some bad information about when a man gets off from work, he's supposed to come home and be with the family. I don't know where she got that information, but she seemed kind of set on it. Early on, I was tired of being poor and hungry and dirty. So I got me two or three jobs, and I began to make some money. And I thought my primary job was to make sure there's food in the refrigerator, the bills is all paid, and we had money in the bank and a new car to drive. That's what I done. Came home one day, and she was gone, so was my son. I was not to see him again for another 19 years. Spent a lot of money trying to find my son, Randy. Very unsuccessful at that. You may have picked up on the fact that I have not mentioned alcohol. Simple, I hadn't drank any alcohol. I was told as a child, you know, Waddy's a nice guy, but he's bad to drink. And there are people in this room that's heard that phrase before. Nice guy, bad to drink. I knew folk that drank were bad folk. Now, I didn't want to be classified as bad folk. I didn't drink. At some point, I picked up a drink and had a taste of it. Wasn't particularly impressed with the taste or flavor of it. Never was a beer drinker. I'm like old Mae West. When Prohibition was over, they asked Mae, said, Mae, have you tried any of this new stuff they call beer? She said, yeah. And as far as I'm concerned, they can put it back in the horse where they got it. I tasted a few drinks of this or a few drinks of that. Wasn't particularly impressed. I bought stuff in pretty bottles. You remember them Michelob bottles? Looked a little bit like a lava lamp. I had to try me some of that. Wasn't particularly impressed. I gave it to the neighbors. At some point, I moved into daily drinking. And I'd have two or three drinks every day. At some point, I crossed that line. I do not know when that happened. There were some papers arrived at my home from a place called Monk's Corner, South Carolina. Still don't know where that is. But I signed the papers and sent them back to Monk's Corner. And I was informed later I was officially divorced. A few years later, I got remarried. stood in front of the minister, and the minister said, "Wilt thou?" And I wanted to wilt so bad. But I'd made a commitment. Got remarried. 7 years later, got divorced again. Lady was an excellent housekeeper. She actually kept the house. Well, we split everything down the middle, okay? It was a 50-50 deal. She kept everything inside and gave me everything outside. But now I'm drinking. Now, I'm not talking about social drinking. See, social drinking is when you have a drink, so shall I. That's not the kind of drinking I was doing. I used to drive 975 miles to go get 20 gallon of moonshine liquor. When I was in college back in Nashville, Tennessee in the middle 60s, I was bootlegging. I'd buy white liquor for $4 a gallon, put it in a charred oak barrel, put that in the back of the truck and ride around Nashville city limits of Metro Nashville. And that liquor slopping around that oak barrel in the back of that truck would char that liquor in a matter of 2 weeks, and I could get $16 a gallon for it all day long. Haul it right down into Printer's Alley and take that keg into Booth Randolph's Yakety Sack Club, pick up my little envelope, had my cash in it, and walk right back out. I knew how to make money bootlegging liquor. I'm going to tell you something. If you're buying whiskey in 5 gallon buckets for your own consumption, that's not social drinking. I done that. I'm not going to go into the horror stories of spending time in the Iron Bar Hotel. I'm not going to talk about the gunfights and getting shot and getting stabbed and going to jail. And it's difficult to qualify yourself as being self-sufficient and self-defense. Oh no, I was a victim. When you run a man down and shoot him in the back with a 12-gauge shotgun, it's difficult to defend yourself with self-defense. I've done that. The horror stories, we've all been through the bar fights. Now, I've never met a real good alcoholic yet who ever lost a bar fight. You ever wonder who it was that got beat up? Wasn't none of us. It was those guys we beat. Man, I wore out a many a good fist with my face. After my second divorce. This is just how it was. I'm going to give you two examples of my drunkology. I was in Leesburg, Florida one night, and I met this little lady named Diane. And she said, "What's your name?" I said, "Well, my friends call me Tennessee." I said, "My ancestors are from Louisiana, but I don't like to be called Louise." And she said, "I need to get away from this fool." Recently, we stood before her minister. Notice how I said that, her minister. And we renewed our vows. Diane and I have been married 25 years. Now, she didn't know we was going to do that on Sunday morning. I snuck in the back door of her church on Sunday morning. When the service was over, I had arranged with the minister for us to renew our vows. He called my wife to the front of the church. She thought she was getting a raise or a promotion. And when me in my fine clothes walked in the back door, she looked at me like a cow looking at a brand new gate. She didn't have no idea what was getting ready to take place. She thought I'd been converted. We stood in front of her minister and renewed our vows. That's not about me, men. That's about you guys. When she and I were dating, we lived about 30 miles apart. I had to go out of town to find somebody to keep company with me. I got up on a particular Monday morning. I had spent the night in her home. I normally did not do that because she had 2 children in high school. I did not like spending the night in her home and sleeping with her in her bed in front of her children. But that particular Sunday night, I had done that. Rumor has it I'd had a little too much to drink. It wasn't safe for me to drive. On Monday morning, I got up. She had already left for work. I started back to my place in Bellevue, and I stopped at a little place called Little Annie's. Seen some of my buddy's vehicles there. Wasn't going to drink, just going to get a cup of coffee and say hello to my friends. Bubba Ray looked at me and he said, "You know what we ought to do? We ought to go to Las Vegas." I said, "Go to Las Vegas?" He turned around and looked at Paul, and Paul said, "That's a good idea." I said, "You Gomers can't go fishing without a note from your wife. How in the world do you think you're going to go to Las Vegas?" 2 hours later, there's a knock on my door. Here stood Ray and Paul. "Are you going with us to Las Vegas?" I said, "I've been packed 20 minutes right there in my suitcase." Paul looked at Ray and said, "His suitcase is on the sofa." I said, "I've been ready to go for 30 minutes. 4 hours later, we're in Las Vegas, Nevada. I called my girlfriend. She's at work. I said, "Honey, if you need anything or if you need to talk to me, I'm staying at the Desert Inn in Las Vegas. I'm in room 2245. You can reach me here by phone." She said, "Well, I'm in Tupelo, Mississippi. Don't call me at work with a bunch of foolishness." 10 minutes later, the phone rang. "Tennessee, would you please pick up the courtesy phone? Mr. Tennessee, pick up the courtesy phone, please. You have a call." My girlfriend said, "You are in Las Vegas." I said, "Yeah." When I woke up that morning, I had no intentions of going anyplace but home. And before the sun went down, I'm all the way across the United States drinking Crown Royal and gambling. I didn't know people planned trips and vacations. I just thought you got drunk and went somewhere. And I had been, y'all laughing because you understand what I'm talking about. I'm at the Desert Inn, 3,000 miles away, had no intentions of going to Desert Inn. I didn't know people called ahead, made reservations, and planned where they was going to sleep, and planned where they was going to eat, and planned who was going with them. I just thought you ended up someplace. And my whole life had been like that. I know y'all never woke up in strange places with strange-looking people. Man, that can be scary when you think about it now. In regard to Louisville, I had a friend named J.P. Wilson. Mr. Wilson was a retired railroader. We're sitting at Little Annie's one day drinking. He said, "Tennessee." He said, "Have you ever seen the horses run?" I said, "Of course I've seen horses run. Where do you think I'm from? Of course I've seen horses." "No," he said, "I mean the horses." I said, "What horses are you talking about, Mr. Wilson?" He said, "Weren't you born in Kentucky?" I said, "Well, sure." He said, "Man, I'm talking about the Kentucky Derby." I said, "No, I never been to the Kentucky Derby." He said, "We ought to go." I said, "Count me in." 3 weeks later, there's a knock on the door. I go to the door. There stands Mr. Wilson. He said, "Are you ready?" I said, "For what?" He said, "To go to Louisville to see the horses run." I said, "I'll be ready in 10 minutes. I throwed some of my cleanest dirty clothes in a suitcase. We stopped at the bank and the liquor store, laid in provisions. We put us a case of beer in the cooler. We took that old green Coleman thermos jug, emptied in a fifth of liquor, some crushed ice, and two cans of 7-Up, and we're on the road. We're coming up through Georgia. We're down south of Macon. I said, "Mr. Wilson, can you drive for a few minutes and let me rest?" He said, "Sure, boy, pull it over." He said, "I need to pee." We pull off side the interstate. I turn around and look, and JP is standing beside the car. He's got his breeches and his underwear plumb down around his ankles. That's not my method of operation. That's not how I done it. I've done it same place he done it, but I didn't do it that way. I said, "Mr. Wilson, just a point of interest. Why is it that you pull your breeches and your underwear plumb down around your ankles when you pee?" "Well, boy," he said, "they was some drunk got me dressed this morning and my underwear is on backwards." This is the man I'm going to let drive. I should have known better. Mr. Wilson's driving for me. I've laid back in the seat under the influence of idiot oil, and this idiot's trying to take a nap. And it begins to spatter rain. Rainy night in Georgia. In a few minutes, I felt something go ka-thump, ka-thump. I thought, "Well, that's Georgia. They're working on the interstate again. Ka-thump, ka-thump." In a minute, I got to raise up. The thumps is getting closer together. I raise up and look around. I'm not talking about 8 or 10 or 12 blue lights. I'm talking about hundreds of blue lights. And I'm looking out. I said, "Mr. Wilson, where are we?" He said, "We're at the Atlanta airport." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, there was a revolving SOB that wouldn't let me get in the right lane, and I seen this sign that said airport." He said, "I had never seen Atlanta airport." I said, "You ain't supposed to be seeing it now either." About that time, no farther than from here to the mess hall, there came a full-size, fully loaded jet right in front of our car. We was out on the tarmac. You know, at the airport, they got them little gates that come up this way, and you're supposed to drive through there? With proper force and under certain conditions, those gates will go this way. I said, "JP, I need to drive." I got under the steering wheel. We went through the gate, and I mean through the gate. Got out of the airport. We're back on 75 North. And I said, "JP, what's the revolving SOB?" I'd never heard it. He said, "That's a SOB any way you turn him." We went to Louisville. We saw the Kentucky Derby. Well, some people saw the Kentucky Derby. Me and Mr. Wilson was in the infield, flat of our back, at the Kentucky Derby. I stayed all day the day prior to the Kentucky Derby. But on Derby Day itself, Willie Shoemaker won the horse race that weekend. I bet my money on a horse named Gulch, who stopped on the back stretch and had lunch. I spent $3,000 that weekend in Louisville at the racetrack and never saw a horse. Now, y'all are understanding what I'm talking about because you've done stuff like that. I didn't know anything about the Kentucky Derby. One of the things I learned when I got there, and my friend from Louisville will attest to this, when you go through the gate to go in to see the horse races, they have a very huge cast iron vat. It's probably 12 feet across. It's at least 4 feet tall. It is a huge cast iron pot. They search people to go in the infield. And if you've got some Jack Daniels in your purse, even if you're a sweet-looking little lady, they'll take it and break that bottle on the side of that cast iron vat and then throw bottle right in there with the whiskey. If you happen to have some Jim Beam,
They bust it and throw it all in the vat. If you've got nice cold beer in one of them beautiful little carrying cases, they open them all and throw them in the vat. Mine was moonshine whiskey. They took my fruit jar, poured it in the vat. They was so proud of themselves. Now, I had on a genuine canvas hunting coat from Sears and Roebuck. And on the side of that, there's a place where you put your shotgun shells. You slide them down these little elastic holes, which fit miniatures perfectly. I was loaded. There's 100,000 people in the infield, folks. 100,000 people in that infield. Every size and description imaginable. And you know, today when I see the Kentucky Derby on TV in Louisville, I think about that cast iron vat. It almost requires a moment of silence. God, what the ultimate drink would have tasted like. And I think about the I think about that cast iron kettle. A few years later, I was driving from a place called Carter County, Kentucky, to the little town of Bellevue where I lived in Florida. And there was a man named Uncle Lot that had been busted for moonshining, and he was a young man. He was 86. And they had him in the courthouse, and they said, "Uncle Lot, you've been charged with distribution of untapped illegal whiskey. How do you plead?" He said, "Not guilty, Judge." He said, "You was caught with 40 gallon. What do you mean not guilty?" He said, "Judge, I don't make moonshine whiskey." He said, "Now, if you want to charge me with making the best moonshine whiskey there is, I'm guilty of that. But I don't be amazed." He said, "Ask your daddy, Judge. Your daddy drank my liquor." Judge said, "Order in the court." He said, "I'm going to fine you $10,000 and give you 10 years in the penitentiary for bootlegging liquor. This is over. However, I'm going to suspend your 10 years in prison because of your age, but you got to promise me to never sell another drop of whiskey as long as you live." Uncle Lot said, "You got my word on it." So I'd go to Uncle Lot's, and he'd fix me up with 20 gallon of moonshine liquor. And I told him it's strictly medicinal. I've got a lot of flu down there in Florida. I think people need medication. It's your responsibility. He said, "Well, if you can make a donation to my retirement fund, I don't sell whiskey no more." Now, I'm coming through Atlanta, downtown Atlanta, 4:30 in the afternoon. I had my most recent drink in Dalton, Georgia. And I'm in downtown Atlanta, pulling a bass boat with 4 5-gallon buckets of moonshine whiskey right through at 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm running 80 miles an hour. They're passing me on both sides. And if you're a real alcoholic and you go back in your memory, you remember something like this. All of a sudden, I realized what I was doing, why I was doing it, where I was at, and my whiskey quit working immediately. I got struck instantly sober, and terror set in. And I'm gripping that steering wheel, and my knuckles were white as new snowflakes. And got down to Macon, and I had to stop. I pulled in the rest area, jerked one of them buckets out of that bass boat, jerked the lid off of it. I'm on my knees in the parking lot. Off the top of that 5-gallon bucket. I didn't know that was not social drinking. My girlfriend and I had been married a couple years. And on a particular Thursday night, I had kept a pistol with me loaded everywhere I had gone for more than 20 years. Two of my brothers were in town. They invited me to their home for a special dinner. My wife and I went to their home. We had some conversation concerning the way they had treated my parents. and I asked them to come outside. And I went to the car to get my gun with the fullest intention of killing those two boys. I've been drunk for 2 days. I had a 55 Bel Air Chevrolet with twin 600 Holley carburetors on it, and it was a nice ride. But when I was drinking, that car could not stay on the road. I went out to Chevrolet to get my gun. And for the first time in 20 years, the gun wasn't in the car. And I know this morning, had the gun been in the car, you men would have a different speaker here this morning. And in that regard, I got to remind y'all of something. God knows I'm no speaker. I know I'm no speaker. And when this is over, you men going to know that man wasn't no speaker. That does not embarrass me in the least. I hope it don't offend you. And if I say something you disagree with, God bless you. Don't get excited about that. It happens to me all the time. I'm always saying stuff I disagree. When I get out, I say, why did you say that? You idiot. If I bring you bad news, talk to Wayne after the meeting. Get a rebate, for God's sake. Thursday night when I went home after my meeting with my brother, I knew my life was in the garbage can, and I had no idea how it got there. I called churches I'd never attended, talked to ministers I'd never met. They said things like, you probably alcoholic. I said, you probably ignorant. I'd hang the phone up. I called mental health places because I knew that my mind was playing tricks on me, because I'd start to the grocery store and end up at the fish camp. I know it never happened to you guys. My wife sent me a store for milk one day. I came back 2 days later. I know it never happened to none of you guys. But if that's happening in your life, guess what? That's not normal behavior. So I call these mental health places. They said, you probably alcoholic. You probably stupid. How many kids you've got? And I'd hang a phone. Somebody finally suggested I call a place called Inner Group. I had never heard of Inner Group, so I wasn't opposed to calling Inner Group. I'd never even been to the Outer Group, you know. I called this place called Inner Group. And I talked to an old man. I knew he was old. And he said, this is Virgil at the Inner Group. Can I help you, please? And I began to tell Virgil what had been going on for the past 2 weeks. And my friend Virgil said, well, Tennessee, that's not unusual. I said, it's not? He said, oh, no, I've done that. I said, well, this is what happened on Wednesday, I think. And when I told Virgil what happened on Wednesday, oh, yeah, I've done that more than once. Now, this man had my undivided attention. I said, I finally got somebody on the telephone whose IQ is greater than his shoe size. This is a good start. Virgil said, you know, there's a meeting here in Leesburg tonight for folks just like you and me, and I'm planning on going. I'll come by and get you, and we'll go to meet together. I said, well, tell me where the meeting is. He said, it's a DAV building on Montclair Road. Today, that's the middle of crack town. I said, I've got wheels, man. I can find it. He told me where it was. I went. Did not know it was Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I'd heard stories about alcoholics. They had to go to meetings and such. I show up, Montclair Road DAV building, with one shoe on. There was some old timers there. One of them made a declaration. He said, Tennessee, it looks like you have lost a shoe. I said, not really, I found one. and the meeting went downhill from there. They brought me a cup of coffee. I don't mean a half a cup. This puppy is level full. And I got this going on. I wasn't nervous. I was just extremely quick. I could have threaded a running sewing machine. That's the truth. I get my coffee and I've got it all over my one shoe. And one of them old timers said, "Man, you must drink a lot." I said, "Not really. I spill most of it." Wayne, I got off to a rough start. I was already having trouble with these old timers. They thought they were smart. I said, "No, that's not smart." And they began to talk about stuff that I had never heard in my life. I look around the room and I see a sign called Think, Think, Think. And it's turned upside down. There was another one said, "First things first." Well, if you do the second thing first, it's not the second thing anymore, it's the first thing. The signs made no sense. I said, "I bet drunks wrote this stuff." I'm going to give you a little clue. I did not get off to a great start with these old timers. Some of them have been sober ever since Jack Daniels was in kindergarten. They had a birthday party one night. It looked the fire department should show up. The cake was ablaze and smoke was rolling off the top of it because some old woman had been sober for 35 years. I said, "I stayed sober 6 months. I better get more than a cake." Then Miss Dar said something about Tennessee, "If you want what I got." And I thought, "Not tonight, Doris, not tonight." This old sister had more wrinkles than a box of raisins, okay? And I'd heard stories about older women and younger men. And I said, "Not tonight, Doris." I heard a term they started throwing around quite often. It was about sponsorship. And I thought, "Ooh, I've heard that term before, sponsorship. Where'd you hear that?" I used to bowl on a bowling league over in Cincinnati. And it was sponsored by Budweiser. And Budweiser paid for everything. That sponsorship would be a good deal for you, Tennessee. Sounds like there's some finances involved. So I started interviewing folk. "What's that man do for a living?" "Well, he's a bricklayer." "No, he ain't got no money." "What's that man do over there?" "Well, he works down here at the family." "No, he ain't got no money." I said, "We got any doctors here?" And he said, "No, we don't have no sober doctors." Because I'd had some physical problems. I'd been ran over by a school bus and I'd been broke all to pieces and I wasn't supposed to be able to walk again. But they put me back together. Took them a long time. So I thought a doctor would be a good choice. I'd get taken care of my physical problem. I said, "What about a lawyer? Y'all got any sober lawyers at this place?" He said, "No, we don't have no sober lawyers." I'd had some legal problems, you know. If folk get to looking for you and you ain't paid your child support, folks got questions for you. Whether you're able to pay it or not, they still got questions. I said, "I could probably use a lawyer." Wasn't no sober lawyers. Wasn't no sober bankers. Had money problems. I need to find somebody to borrow some money from. There got to be a banker in here, and there wasn't no banker. I looked up 7-8 years ago. I was sponsoring a doctor, a banker, and a lawyer. For God's sake, don't do that. I'm going to tell you a little bit what it's like today. Ended up with a disabled retired plumber for a sponsor that couldn't even fix my toilet. This is not getting off to a good start, Tennessee. I came to Rock Eagle for 5 or 6 years, twice a year. I finally discovered my connection with Rock Eagle. There's a man named Doc Crandall from Germantown, Ohio, who sponsored a man named Jim Calvey from Germantown, Ohio. Jim Calvey moved to Leesburg, Florida, and sponsored a man named Marvin Pelt, who sponsored me. I didn't know that. I'd been coming here 5 years. Don't be confused with my intelligence. It took me 5 years to figure out I had a connection with Doc Randall. Didn't know that. It took me 5 years to figure that. Don't accuse me of carrying intelligence. I was exposed to a lot of education, but I never acquired any of it. I'm going to tell you some of the things that's happened in my life since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, for you folk that know me, you already know this is true. For you who don't, I am probably one of the wealthiest people that you'll ever meet. Don't try it. It's got nothing to do with money. I'm one of the wealthiest people you'll probably ever meet. There's nothing that I need that I don't already have. When I turned my life and will over the care of God as I understand God, God took over. And I discovered that I can't do God's will my way. I got to do God's will God's way. Sometimes I have to pray about that. As always, when your gray matter turns to brown mud, you start forgetting things. I'd like to tell you when I got sober this morning, but I don't have a clue. It happened sometime after I quit drinking liquor, I'm sure of that. But I used the day after the 4th of April in 1991 as my sobriety date. And the reason I say it like that, they tell me it's not nice to mention the word fifth around this many drunks. So it was the day after the 4th of April. From that day to this day, it's not been necessary for me to take a sip, a nip, a trip, or a dip, a potion, notion, or a lotion that's affected me from the chin up nor down. I had a total of one white chip. I've never had a relapse yet on alcohol or drugs. I've had every other type of relapse there is. I've had physical relapse. I've had emotional relapse. I've had spiritual relapse. I've had financial relapse, a disaster. I've relapsed in every aspect of my life other than drugs and alcohol. There's been times when I've talked to my wife like a borrowed bird dog. And my relationship with my wife was in relapse. Some of you men know exactly what I'm talking about. See, when I leave here, I probably won't see y'all for 6 months. But then you're going to forget everything I say. Some of you are going to forget it before you get your car loaded this morning. But for those who want to listen and learn, you're going to face relapse, but it don't have to be drugs and alcohol. This program's given me a complete new way to live. I have 5 grandchildren today. And I'm going to tell you some of the things that's happened in recovery for me. I'm reminded of the little girl who went off to Europe on a holiday with Grandma. Summer vacation. And when she got back to school that fall, she had taken the tours in Europe. She saw the Parthenon. She'd seen the Eiffel Tower. She'd seen the Leaning Tower of Pisa. Visited the great cathedrals, went to Westminster Abbey. And while she was in the cathedral, she looked up and she said, "Sir, who are the people that are in the windows? Beautiful stained glass windows." The tour guide said, "Oh, honey," said, "those are the saints." She said, "They're so pretty." She got home, and that fall the teacher asked the children what they had done on their summer vacation. Little girl said, "Oh," said, "I took a tour with Grandma in Europe, and I got to go see the Parthenon." She said, I saw the Globe Theater where William Shakespeare performed live on stage. We took a ride in the gondolas where the guy sang to us and played music and paddled the boat. It was wonderful. And the little girl said, I also got to see the saints. And the teacher said, honey, tell me about the saints. And the little girl thought for just a minute, and she said, oh, teacher. She said, those are the people who let the light in. This morning, I'm grateful the men in this room who let the light in so that Tennessee don't have to be the kind of a stumble bum he was when he got here in 1991. I'm glad there's men here today who are still letting the light in. Teacher told the children, she said, now, I've got a word for you, and I want you to tell me a story that you understand about a miracle. You think about that and tell me about a miracle come Monday morning. So Monday morning, the little girl showed up and she said, teacher, I know what a miracle is. She said, would you share it with her? She said, sure. She said, a long time ago, there was a man named Jonah. And God wanted Jonah to do something, and Jonah didn't want to do it, and Jonah got swallowed by a whale. And he lived. And the teacher said, well, honey, that's a wonderful story, and I know where you got it. Well, where did you hear that? She said, Sunday school. The teacher said, well, let me explain something, child. I'm a very educated lady. I know about whales. I know about marine life. And it's physically impossible for a whale to swallow a human being. And the little girl said, yeah, isn't that a miracle? And the teacher said, child, you don't understand. A whale cannot swallow a human being. And the little girl said, it happened. Teacher said, no, it didn't happen. It's just a nice story. And the little girl said, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask Jonah how it happened. This educated, smart lady said, well, question, what are you going to do if you get to heaven and Jonah's not there? Little girl said, I'm going to let you ask him. Let me explain something to you, folks. This morning, you are not a miracle. We got people running around, oh, I'm a miracle. A little short-sighted on that one. I'll tell you what the miracle is. The miracle is the magic and power of our 12 steps. That's the only program we've got. We read it at every meeting. It's called How It Works. Do you know how I got that title? Bill called it How It Works. And he said they're a nosy lot and they want to figure stuff out. We'll call this How It Works. They'll read it at every meeting. And what How It Works, the way it's written, really is stuff you're going to have to do. But he knew he couldn't call it that. None of us would read it. We'd take it out of the book for 6 months. When we read How It Works, we find out what we have to do. How It Works is in the next chapter, Into Action. There ain't no chapter in the book called I've Been Thinking About It. This is a program of action. You can sit in a chicken coop 10 hours a day. Ain't nobody going to drive by and say, look at that big chicken. They know you're not a chicken. And tell that with one glance. We got people sitting in the rooms today that's so dry, you can set them on fire with two country matches. But they don't have an idea what sobriety's about. I do not know when I got sober. It kind of snuck up on me. But I know it was a result of working these 12 steps. Even when we start our 12 and 12 talks about our newfound sobriety. I got to tell you about my grandson. My grandson was born in South Florida. We went down for his birth. Little fella looked like a football player, 9 pounds, 3 ounces. In less than 2 weeks, he lost weight every day. He had a hole in his esophagus, and every time he'd try to eat, he'd try to drown. So he quit trying to eat, lost weight every day. His little body was creating 5 times as much insulin as he could use. Had to have shots in the heel of his feet every day. He didn't have an artery between his left lung and his heart, and we're losing him. I called my sponsor from the hospital room and tell Marvin what's going on. And Marvin said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm at the hospital with my grandson and my family." He said, "Get out of there. You're no doctor. Get out of the way." He said, "You go get in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous now. We're not going to talk about this. Just go do it." And he hung the phone up on me. And I thought, surely we could have talked about it. I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the parking lot, biker club. Walked up behind a big boy. He turned around and looked at me. He took one look at me and he said, "Tennessee, who licked all the red off of your sucker this morning?" I thought that was kind of cold, Bill. And I told him what was going on with my grandson. He took one look at me halfway through the conversation. He said, "You come with me." We went in that clubhouse. This big old boy put his fingers in his mouth and whistled. And there's about 40 bikers and their girlfriends in there and their wives. He said, "Circle up. Meeting ain't for another 30 minutes. He said, "Tennessee's got a serious health problem with his grandson, and he needs help now, and we're going to pray." They didn't say a silent moment of prayer after the meeting or when you, "We're going to pray." And here's 60 of these folks down there, arm in arm, praying for little Bill, Tennessee's grandson. I stayed for the meeting and went back to the hospital that evening. The next morning, I'd started back to the hospital and went by the clubhouse. Get a cup of coffee before I went to the hospital to check on my grandson. A little girl named Brenda came up, and she said, "Tennessee, I have to make amends." I said, "To who, honey?" She said, "To you." She said, "I've done something without your permission. My sponsor said I need to make amends." I said, "Well, child, what have you done?" She said, "After you sharing with us about your grandson yesterday morning, I went home and got on my computer. And I put up a web page, and it simply said, a friend of Bill W.'s called Tennessee has a grandson in Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital. Needs serious prayer now." And she said, "I didn't ask your permission to do that." Prayer went up around the world for Tennessee's grandson who's laying over in a hospital less than a month old. That little boy's 15 years old now. Don't ever take any medicine. Playing soccer. They performed open heart surgery on him. One of the smartest kids I've ever seen. He's 15. He'll be 16 in the fall if he don't get too smart with Grandpa. I had a set of twin grandbabies born. Allergic to the protein in the baby food. Every time they would eat, immediately their bowels would move. The children were starving to death. I called a friend of mine in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous who knew something about babies. He said, "Oh yeah, I'm familiar with that problem." I said, "We found out the solution is a non-protein baby food. And it costs $35 a can." He said, "It's very expensive." I said, "Do you have a person in your business, a factory rep that I could call and maybe get a discount and get some of this baby food for my grandchildren?" He said, "Give me a call back tomorrow and let me see what I can find out." The next day before I called him, my daughter called me from Raleigh, North Carolina. And she said, "What's going on?" I said, "I don't have a clue. And if you ask me that this morning, I still don't know what's going on. Ask me how I'm doing, I don't know. You tell me." I said, "What are you talking about, child?" She said, "There's 3 cases of this baby food sitting on my porch. Where'd it come from? How have it get here? I said, probably by truck. I don't know how it got there. Who do I thank? I said, thank God. And I hung the phone up. She called me back madder than a wet hen. This stuff, $35 a can, it showed up by the pallet load. That's what AA is all about. It's God doing for me what I can't do for myself, and I've got to ask for help. Had a trusted, loving friend named Ron Britt. I spent 4 years trying to 12-step Ron Britt. He ended up in a hospital with a drug-induced overdose of cocaine. He'd had a stroke. Ron got sober and stayed sober and died sober, pancreatic cancer. It was all about me and my loss. How selfish can I be? I never thought about the grandkids who had lost their grandpa. I never thought about Linda who had lost her husband, her mate, her soulmate. I thought about my loss. Through a lot of counsel with people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out what that was all about. It was about me learning to be grateful for being so blessed to have people like Ron Britt in my life for just a short time. I learned how to appreciate the legacy of people like Jimmy Smith and Hoyt Allison and Alan Swan and C.D. Collins and Poor Boy Rice, and the list goes on and on. I've learned how to be grateful for the gifts God sent my way. Do I deserve them? Absolutely not. If I got what I deserved this morning, I'd be locked in prison for the rest of my life. My God is one of grace and mercy, forgiveness. That's what my God's about. And whether you know this or not, your God's not out to get you. Your God wants you happy, joyous, and free, and He wants you to have the very best that He can offer. Our literature says that there's one that has all power. Guess what else He's got? He's got the best homes, He's got the best jobs, and He's in charge of finances. If you'll turn your life and will over to the care of God. We allow God to care for us. We allow God to discipline us. And if you have an argument with this, read this big blue coaster. It's in here, every bit of it. I'm not smart enough to dream this stuff up. Nothing this simple can work this well until you start working with it. I was called to my parents' home. My mother was dying with terminal cancer. And I sat beside her bed and watched her leave this world and go to the next world. The last meal she ate, I prepared for her. The last time her face was washed before the undertaker came and got her body, I washed her face for her. And I was there when she left here. That morning at 10:30, she said, "Son, you know I'm leaving." I said, "Yes, Mother, we know." She said, "But I don't want to be by myself when I have to go." I said, "Mother, I'm not going anyplace. I'm here because this is where I belong." And she reached up and got me by the face and pulled me down and kissed me on the cheek. She said, "I know that's true." And that evening at 5:30, my mother left here. You may think this is cold and callous. I have never grieved my mother leaving for not even 1 minute. I had a chance to be by my mother's side when she made that journey. A few years later, my father passed away in recovery. I've lost 3 sponsors in recovery. The fourth one wasn't sure he wanted the job when he got that bit of news. I've got to tell you a little bit about my wife. She had 7 heart procedures in 14 months. Every time they'd take her down that room for that surgery, I'd be the last thing she saw before she went to sleep. And when she woke up, I was standing beside her bed. That's not about me. That's about like men in these rooms. That's what that's about. It's about you guys. You guys taught me how to be a responsible husband and to suit up and show up when I need it. It's of no great importance to anyone except maybe me and my wife, but today I make and design custom jewelry. And I've made a beautiful pair of rings for a client worth a lot of money. I finished them, put them in jeweler's paper, and laid them on the dining room table, called my client and told her she could pick them up the next morning. She was so excited. Next morning I get up. My wife's been at work for an hour. I go in, I'm looking on the dining room table, and I cannot locate these two pieces of jewelry. So I called my wife at work. I said, "Honey, when you got up this morning, did you happen to clean off the table?" She said, "I always do." Today is garbage day. I said, "When you clean off the table, did you happen to put that stuff in the garbage can?" "Oh, I always do." I said, "Did you take the garbage out to the road for the garbage man to pick up?" She said, "I always do." I'm thinking, I've got to call this lady and tell her somebody broke in here and stole her stuff. I call my sponsor and tell him what's happened. The wife comes home crying and praying. And the sponsor said, "You're going to call your customer and tell her the truth." I said, "But Marvin," he said, "there ain't no buts. You're going to call your customer and tell the lady that." And I done that, and I lost a great customer that morning. My wife and I both learned something from that experience. I learned that I need to be more careful with my jewelry business. My wife learned that I need to be more careful with my jewelry business. For 2 or 3 days, she walked around the house and cried. Asked me to forgive her. Finally, I told her, I said, "Baby, listen, it's just money. It's just money. Evidently, it happened the way it's supposed to happen. You got to quit worrying about this. For God's sake, quit crying about it. It's over. It's done with. Let's move on." And that night, she came in from work and stood in front of my recliner. And she said, "God must have loved me an awful lot to put somebody like you in my life." Men, this morning, the one thing I know for certain is that God must have loved me an awful lot to put men like you in my life. And for that, I will owe you as long as there's breath in my body. Thank you. Be careful on the way home. God bless.
About it, guys.
Make a circle. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. And now, two final voices.
I'm Bill Hollingsworth, and I'm an alcoholic. In our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it told me about God. It told me about sobriety. And the God that I understand today, or have a relationship, I do not understand, but the God I have a relationship with today is an all-powerful God. He can do anything, anytime, anywhere. He also is everywhere, all the time. But isn't it strange, and maybe you feel this way too, I never feel as close to God as I do when I'm with people like you.
I can tell you today, when I introduce myself as being Doc Kremer, that I'm an alcoholic, and by the grace of God, I'm sober this morning. I mean just that. I don't mean anything else. I mean just that. I do believe that today that God works through you people. Man, I've lost this desire to take a drink. Man, that's freedom for this alcohol. I quite often say, man, when I get up in the morning and brush my teeth and don't gag, I know he's there and everything's going to be all right. But to go 24 hours, an alcoholic, and not wanting to take a drink. I'm not saying about taking one, but not wanting to take one. That is freedom. That is freedom.
In a moment, we're going to close in the usual manner with the Lord's Prayer. But this morning, I ask you to do something a little different. I ask that you not bow your heads and not close your eyes. But as we say this prayer, to look around this room and into the faces of your brothers. And the next time you feel lonely or alone, remember this moment. Our Father, God bless you and safe travels.